7:32 just about. So the G20 summit does kick off today, as we've been hearing. World leaders from 19 countries and the European Union meeting in Osaka, Japan for 2 days. Much of the talk leading up to it has surrounded the bilateral meeting between Chinese President Xi Jinping and US counterpart Donald Trump due to their ongoing trade war. And the context there, of course, is that it's so challenging to arrange summits elsewhere. You've got to get all the security and various other matters in place. But whilst so many of these world leaders in one location for a G20 summit, the opportunities are plentiful. Let's talk about the prospects, the outlook, the possibilities with Professor John Curtin, G20 Research Group Director of Political Science at the University of Toronto, who's in Osaka now to cover the summit. Good morning to you.
Good morning. How are you?
Good, thank you. We've also got on the line, if I may introduce, Professor Stephen Robert Nagy from the Department of Politics and International Studies at International Christian University in Tokyo. Thank you also for joining us.
Thank you, and thank you to John for coming all the way from Canada for the G20.
So if I can start with you, Professor Curtin, the man doing all that travelling, is it the Xi-Trump meeting that's drawing most attention then at this point? Is it justified, the media's focus on that?
Well, it certainly is in the media in the United States and adjacent parts of the world, but in other countries, they have a much broader focus, including in China itself. Yes, they're concerned with whether or not there will be another truce in the ongoing U.S.-China trade war, which has now turned into a technology war, a broader competition. But they know that they have a stake in so many of the other issues, which Prime Minister Abe has made priorities at the summit. So they're looking at this as a full-strength summit rather than a one-shot bilateral meeting at its end.
Professor Nagy, is it a little too optimistic to expect a deal between Trump and Xi in Osaka?
Well, absolutely. I think in both capitals of Beijing and Washington, that the domestic pressures on both politicians really make it unlikely that they could come to a compromise that's seen as a compromise. For example, in the Chinese context, this year is a year of inconvenient anniversaries. It's the 70th anniversary of the People's Republic of China, of course, the 30th anniversary of the Tiananmen Square massacre, and we've just had these Hong Kong protests. For President Xi to back down, to show compromise in a way that China is perceived to be compromising in an unfair way is just an untenable position from Xi Jinping's point of view. And I think President Trump is in a similar situation in that, you know, he has been, tailored himself as this great negotiator. And if he comes away with a bad deal, he'll be criticized by the Democrats and he'll lose some of his political capital back home.
Professor Curtin, it's an unusual scenario when we've got so many leaders in one place with so many huge issues circling at the same time. And in the back of Trump's mind will be his visit to Korea this weekend. Is that going to be, do you think, a welcome relief or perhaps more of a headache for him?
No, I think it's going to be an important move, and there'll be very good messages and maybe even some real advances. It does point out the key point that China and the United States and Japan and Korea have an overwhelmingly shared interest in making sure that North Korea's nuclear program does not expand to the point where it could threaten countries all around the world, and indeed where accidents can happen, which is a big threat to everyone. On the U.S.-China trade war, if I could come back to that.
Yeah.
I disagree with my colleague. Mr. Trump has just started his reelection campaign. He knows that the existing U.S. tariffs and the Chinese retaliation are badly hurting his core voters in his base, from the farmers in the Midwest also being flooded by climate change, who can't pump their soybeans into China anymore. His supporters who shop at Walmart, who make things in the industrial economy, Walked in at about 40% approval rating in the polls, and he knows he has to back off and move toward free trade. He just did it with Japan when he was here, saying, I'm not going to impose my threatened tariffs. He just did it with Mexico. He just did it before in signing a new NAFTA, which he had previously said was the worst trade deal in history. He's opened bilateral negotiations with Japan for freer trade. So Trump has turned into a free trader now. And as for China, their economy is slowing. They're feeling the economic pain, too. So I think a trade truce, at least a pause for reflection, is very much in the cards. Whether it'll be more than that, I think, is the open question now.
Indeed. And Professor Nagy, of course, there's no reason why we can't circle around these issues because they do entwine, don't they? The conversation that President Trump will be having with Xi, he'll be thinking about his supporter base at home, but he'll also be thinking how, if he can secure President Xi's support in an even more meaningful way on North Korea, that could sweeten any trade attitude.
Well, I think we need to clearly understand who can leverage North Korea against each other, and in this case, it's China is looking at North Korea as a potential leverage in terms of putting or slowing down this trade war or coming to a trade truce, perhaps putting that on the table that will do more to push North Korea in a more positive direction. But I think North Korea does have a lot of agency here, and they can move not only to China, but they can go to the Russians and get support for their initiatives there. So North Korea is a mixed bag here, and I'm not sure how much leverage the United States or China has in terms of using North Korea to push their trade agenda. But I think what John said was very true, that President Trump's supporters, or at least some of the supporters, are being hurt by this trade war. The question is President Trump thinking about this as merely a trade war, or is it a longer game to put pressure on China to fundamentally change the nature of the state, to push back against some of its assertive behavior in the East and South China Sea and some of its trade practices, not to mention dealing with this technology competition that is really moving quickly, and we don't know the direction it's going to go. So there's a lot on the table here, and if President Trump is playing the long game, which we're not sure, then I don't see anything more than a trade truce. And again, that doesn't mean pulling back the sanctions that are already existing on China.
Professor Curtin, again, you can get lost, can't you? There's so many leaders in one place that ordinarily meetings that would get a lot of attention might go somewhat under the radar. Last night, we already saw a big summit between President Moon Jae-in and Xi Jinping. Did that get much attention at all from your perspective?
Well, a little bit, because you're quite right. It's a very intricate sociogram, if you will, with all kinds of overlapping meetings, pointing to the fact that there's many overlapping coalitions, too. And, of course, there is a Northeast Asian community with very real shared interests that will be at stake here. Plastics pollution is the obvious one, where all of the G20 leaders are agreed they're going to launch a new regime, a new global regime to prevent plastic pollution in the ocean. So, yes, some of the bigger issues of the East China Sea, the South China Sea, are problematic, not to mention a little dispute between Japan and South Korea over tiny little maritime entities. They do have a shared interest in the ecology and the health of that area, which they share. The same is true even on trade. For going beyond Donald Trump's rather narrow view of the United States economy of the 1950s, steel, autos, and getting the high frontier. The global economy is becoming a service economy. the newest high frontier is digital trade. So they will be launching here all 20 Mr. Abe's signature achievement for his summer, an Osaka track for digital free flow with trust. That will be a very significant achievement. And also, less relevant to China, but very important for Korea, for Japan, a new regime for taxation. So companies that get value from users, from customers in Korea, in Japan, can get their fair share of taxes from the Amazons and the Facebooks and the Googles that they can't right now under the old rules of international tax. So there is a lot moving forward. And we just have to remember, yes, China and the United States are number one and two in the global economy, but it's a very different United States than we had in 1950, when by itself it was about half the global economy. It's only at best about 25%, and free trade is breaking out all over in and among the other 75%. Japan, Canada are just waiting to see when China will join the comprehensive progressive and specific partnership that they launched when Donald Trump said, no, I'm going to pull out. All the others said, well, we're going to go ahead without you. So it's quite possible to get achievements, even if the United States is a little slow to join in.
And if we can finish, Professor Nagy, by just getting your thoughts on the biggest achievements or the most notable areas that we should be focusing on over the next couple of days?
Well, I think we should put it in the context that the G20 is, you know, what happens to the G20 often isn't that big of a deal. It came together at a time of crisis, and since that crisis, it's been able to forge some consensus and move multilateralism in a more positive direction, but it hasn't really achieved that much. Even last year at the Argentina G20, you know, it was overshadowed by the Xi Trump Kabuki Theater. And I think this year as well, that is partly going to be a challenge for the G20. But that being said, I think that John was very right that Prime Minister Abe's initiative to ensure that the digital economy is free and open and full of trust is going to be something that's going to be the basis for future trade going forward, in that it's the digital economy, it's not the economy of the 1970s and 80s that's going to increase prosperity in the region, further integrate countries within the region and outside the region. So I think that's very important. The second, and I think is a tragedy, is that on climate change and an agreement on a broader climate change clause, I think this has been dramatically watered down. And I think this particular G20 will be seen as a disappointment in terms of a commitment by these very important countries to combat climate change collectively. And I think that has come because of pressure from the United States rather than China or Japan or other countries.
Well, Professors Curtin and Nagy, thank you both of you for taking the time to speak with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Yeah, good chat.